Yes, 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 yes. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, and this is Now We're Talking. And this music that's playing underneath is not an accident. You know, earlier in my DJ career, what you just heard could have happened. I introduced the show, some music starts playing, and it sounds like I don't know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. I'm trying something different here. I'm playing the opening track off the latest release, the debut release from Gasm, a local band here in Vancouver. And I was talking to Jason before the show. We were talking about playing some music from the album. And we decided, why not embrace the fact that these are longer tracks. You know, these aren't 2 to 3 minute pop songs. These are longer ambient tracks. I don't want to use too many descriptors because I know they'll probably get it wrong. But we're going to talk to Jason about that. This is the opening track off the album. The album is called Dethrone the DJs. And I don't feel threatened by that. A lesser DJ would. This reminds me, actually, Tom Petty passed away a couple weeks ago, and he had an album called, or he had a track called The Last DJ. A lot of DJs didn't like that. But I'm totally comfortable with playing this track called Dethrone the DJs, because I feel very comfortable perched on my throne here in the studio. Jason, you're with me today. Welcome. Jason Newcomb from the band Gasm. If anybody wants to look it up, G-H-A-Z-M, all uppercase. I asked whether or not there's any punctuation, like, for example, an exclamation point. And I think you indicated that's optional. It's okay if I do that, but technically not.
Yeah, I guess it would be like when you get, like, a TV dinner, and it says, like, suggested serving.
Right.
But there's no legality.
There's no need to do it, but the option is mine. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that if I feel the need to do that, if I'm feeling enthusiastic about it, why say that I can't do it? Or even if I'm confused about the name and whether it's meant to be uppercase, a question mark, you know?
You could do a question mark. You do like a colon.
Colon. Yeah. Yeah. Semicolon if you're feeling tentative, maybe.
I'm all about optionality.
Thank you very much.
That's my whole thing.
Yeah. That makes you a good guest. I'm glad that you're my guest today because listeners of Now We're Talking will be aware that this music, it's interesting. It's actually kind of guiding the way I want to speak right now, kind of slow down a little bit. But listeners of the podcast / radio show will know it's been a 3-month hiatus, so I'm glad you're here with me today. I'm glad you're my guest.
I'm very grateful that you are doing this. It means a lot to me. I appreciate it.
Cool. Yeah, we've talked about the possibility of you being on the show going back at least to the summer, if not before that. And I knew I was taking this hiatus because I was busy with gigging and playing music, but I'm glad we're here. And also I know we live in the same building, so we're around each other, and I know that you've been working on this album for some time, and I know that this year is the year that it was really taking shape, and ultimately pre-production, recording, mixing, mastering, the whole process. It was released on September 22nd, and that's my first question. How does it feel to accomplish that? Because for me, as being around people that create things, or my own attempts to create things, it's interesting to have a day when it's like, here it is. What was it like to have that day, here it is?
Here it is. Well, I think I understand what you're asking. Like, I could say, like, the technical thing is like, well, all sorts of other things that had to be done, you know, digital marketing, all that stuff. But there was, like, I had that moment where, okay, I've been a musician for 24 years, and it's like the one thing in my life that I've done that long.
Yeah.
What does that mean? And like, this is it. This is the thing that I had been not able to articulate, and finally there's like, I'm scratching the surface and seeing what's underneath there. And it's a very meaningful experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what, so was the emotions surrounding that, was there relief in it? Was there trepidation and fear about making it available to others and what they might think of it?
Well, all of those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I what they think of it. Yeah. It's, I've been thinking a lot about that because it's, you do something that long, you know, you're doing it for yourself.
Right.
But then you put something out there and you realize you're doing it for other people too. It's, mm-hmm. it's a gift, right? Like, so
that it really is the release part of it is that, right? Because you can create something and keep it to yourself your whole life, but to choose to put it onto iTunes or whatever it is. You mentioned it's on all those digital platforms available currently. Dethrone the DJs. The band is called Gasm. We're listening to it right now. The choice to release it is the choice to give a shit about what other people think, in a way.
Yeah, yeah. You're making yourself vulnerable, and you're... There's like a hope in it.
Yeah.
Because you're doing... There's also like, wow, I was really confident in this. Like, should I have been? Because you're saying something and you're putting so much energy behind it. And it's like, this is important. Mm-hmm. And then you're realizing, well, maybe it's not to someone else. But I know it's important because I didn't just do all of that for... If I didn't on some level sense that this was a really meaningful and gift to people, I guess is how I'd put it.
You were talking about Frank Zappa earlier and mentioning a documentary you just saw yesterday.
Yeah.
And when he had sort of some advice that he offered. What was that?
Well, the advice was first thing you need to know if you're going to be a musician, nobody cares.
I think that's great.
Yeah, and nobody's going to listen to your music. That's the first thing you need to contend with.
How come nobody told me that when I started? Where was he when I needed him?
Well, yeah, I think, and the documentary highlights how tough Frank Zappa was. He's just like a tough character. And I think that's necessary if you're going to be an artist that knows you're doing something that you can't let go. You're going to have to be tough and just do it anyway.
Yeah, that's actually, when you told me that, I thought it was great because it's hilarious and I appreciate the humor in it. But what I got from it, having some sense of who he is, very limited, and maybe just projecting my own experience onto it, is that's actually very freeing to think about that.
Yeah.
Because what it does is it exposes for you what your intention is, why you're doing it in the first place, and maybe relieve you of the obsession of being defined by the fantasy of instant acceptance and regard from everybody on the planet, validating that everything that you ever have been is now encapsulated in this thing. You're going to win an Academy Award for some reason, even though it's music. For some reason, I feel like that's the biggest award there is. So, yeah, you get your Grammys and you get your Billboard Music Awards, but you're going to get an Oscar too. You're going to get it all. And then you're going to be happy. It's insane. It's insane. It can be an obsession. And to just know from the outset, nobody's going to listen. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to care. It's such an extreme. It's the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Maybe the truth can exist somewhere in the middle.
It's the process of making this album was one thing you discover is barely anybody knows we exist. So you can just do anything you want.
That is freeing. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. I've been watching a lot of music documentaries recently, and one thing that's come up a couple times that I've paid attention to, which seems so obvious but I hadn't really considered because I've never been in this situation, was when you have the big success with a big song or a big album, whatever, it's going to be a lot harder to stick around.
Well, you have this people, like, it's like the first impressions thing.
Yeah.
First impressions are both a blessing and a curse.
Exactly.
It's like once people have a perception of what you do, and you do something else, it's like, but why didn't you do the thing that I wanted you to do?
Yeah.
And to be anonymous is
freedom.
Hopefully temporary.
Yeah.
But that onset of freedom is where you get to decide what kind of person you're going to be and what kind of artist you're going to be.
Yeah, and I think a lot of artists, when they reflect on their pre-fame period, realize, of course, they wanted to be legitimized, but they didn't really appreciate the freedom they had before they were painted into a corner to just kind of figure it out. So that's where you're at the moment, is you have this freedom to create this album and do whatever you want and not feel bound by any rules about what music should be.
And I think I'm realizing that if this is where I stay, even though I don't want to stay here, I want other problems, other different kinds of challenges. But if this is where I stay and I get to keep doing that kind of thing, playing in that sandbox, that's already a miracle, right? Like, it's already a blessing.
You mentioned a sandbox, and I know we're listening to Baked on the Beach. how could I not tie those things together? Yeah. Because I just gives me the image. We're listening to the music right now, thinking about that song title. What is the basis of titling a song like this? Will there be lyrical content later in this song, you think you mentioned?
Not lyrical content, okay. Not in this piece.
So how do you title a instrumental piece? How did you arrive at that title?
First of all, I'm really excited you're hearing this for the first time. I get to vicariously live through you. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is cool. It is a cool way to do it. As I say, usually the way this works is if there's a song or two played from an album when somebody comes in here, we throw to it, it plays here. Maybe me and the artist listen to it, or maybe we just have a conversation. Mm-hmm. But this is like we're existing inside the song while we have this conversation. I like that about this music.
I couldn't be more proud. That was a big part of the concept was... particularly for this piece, but I think accidentally for the whole band is like it's music you can inhabit. It doesn't necessarily impose a thing on you.
Yeah.
Or if it does, then it's like more seductive and less of a dominating thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is very appropriate use of the.
It really is. Yeah. I hadn't really given it much thought until we had the conversation before, and I was asking about the tracks, and I was like, wait a minute, how long are they? Because the conventional DJ. That's probably soon to be dethroned in me, is thinking, oh, geez, over 3 minutes. That's a nightmare. Because the convention is you want short, snappy songs. We throw to it. We come back. We have a great conversation. You're in, you're out. Let's get this over with. Mm-hmm. But that's obviously extremely cynical. I'm joking. But
yeah, of course. Yeah.
But when you mentioned the length of it, I thought, well, I don't want to not play these tracks. So how do we embrace its length? And I'm I'm liking the opportunity here to... for it to set some sort of tone actually for the conversation. It's interesting. How did you play guitar?
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about some of this before, but how did you get from picking up a guitar to this kind of music? What's been the journey from, I guess, the decision to pick up the guitar, learn how to play it, learn the chords, strum, and then play this kind of music?
Yeah. So the decision to play the guitar was... very natural because all the boys in my family play guitar.
Okay.
Or some sort of instrument.
It's an East Coast family, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I feel like there's a lot of music out there.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it.
Well, I mean, that was a very inelegant statement, but I guess what I mean by that is, and maybe it's a stereotype, when I think of the East Coast, and this may be very much a generalization, I think about families where everybody plays guitar.
It's probably the case. It's just I grew up in a small town. You don't know that many people. So
yeah.
It's the East Coast at large is a little bit foreign to me. But yeah, so the family played guitar. And at one point, I just knew that I wanted to play guitar. And I had this old beater with a broken neck. And the action was like an inch high, and somehow I figured out how to play chords. Dad taught me a couple of chords. Brian, my brother, taught me a bunch of other chords, which I'm eternally grateful for. And I discovered this old songbook called Great Songs of the 60s.
Nice.
And I didn't know any of the songs, but I learned how to read chord diagrams.
Yeah.
And I would play the songs the way I thought they should go.
Okay. Without actually having heard some of the songs?
That's right, yeah. So
interesting.
I Want to Hold Your Hand, Yesterday, a lot of Beatles songs, like Paul Anka.
Chord-heavy songs, actually, too. Like Yesterday,
it's pretty
chord-heavy.
And that's what opened up the world of chords to me. So I'm starting to discover, like, I could spend many lifetimes doing this. So I fall in love with music, right?
Right.
And then I kind of do the songwriter thing because... small town and limited resources. I didn't really know how to expand out of that. So I just had this idea that music could be something else because of, largely because of CBC Radio, Brave New Waves. I discovered that there were like unlimited options to the approach to music, but I had limited resources. I had a guitar and I could kind of sing.
Right.
So I kind of discovered that I could write songs a different way, and I tried that. And then at some point, I realized a lot of what I was doing artistically was exteriorizing what was in me. And then the pieces were getting increasingly darker. And I'm like, and then you're surrounded by these legions of songs that are essentially your inner demons, and it's a weird dark, uncomfortable thing, right? And then I thought, okay, if I can exteriorize what I'm feeling, I wonder if I can reverse the process, reverse engineer that musical process, and compose music that will change who I am in the future. And I composed a piece that was essentially, for me, the creation of hope. And I realized that music actually has a transformative power. I wasn't that intimate with that aspect of music.
Right.
So, a few years later, I finally am able to play with some other musicians that are way ahead of me.
Which is a good way to do it, right?
Yeah, and we get to paint these pictures. So I pour myself into that process of creating a space within which you can inhabit and potentially can transform an individual, right? Or at least nudge them in a certain direction. Hopefully that's...
In sort of an aspirational way? Like, if I'm understanding what you're saying, the initial music you wrote was a reflection, an unconscious reflection maybe of some demons and some darkness that we all have inside of us. Mm-hmm. And you thought, I can flip this around and make it aspirational, the direction I want to transform into, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's you're setting a target and you're creating this, essentially this vision for what can be rather than expressing what is.
Hmm.
So that's kind of what... So that was like the milestone, like 7 years ago, when I realized here's yet another approach to music.
Hmm.
And it culminates in this album, which I think is, people are reporting back. Like, I get to kind of inhabit this space. It doesn't impose itself on me. And someone said that they were able to ward off psychic attacks in the Whole Foods aisle.
Of all places.
Yeah. Well, it was...
Something about organic groceries that can really, do that too.
Yeah, I guess like fluorescent lighting, and it's not a comfortable atmosphere.
Sure.
So listening to it there kind of like gives you a little bubble to kind of be in, and you're in a space that you create for yourself inside this other space, right?
Like, how did that feel to have somebody communicate to you that their experience of your music was comforting?
It's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think of a better comment, really. It's someone said that it felt like a warm blanket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think about the word comforting, because maybe it's not always the word that comes to mind right away, but at the end of the day, when I think about what art is for, definitely that's part of it, like being comforted that you're not alone in the universe, even though it might feel that way sometimes, like you feel understood, or you understand somebody else. And I don't know, that's what I think about when I think about the word comfort and feeling comforted. So I can appreciate how if somebody gives you the sense that that's what the music did for you, what could be better, really? We're just floating around in a rocking space, and for a moment in the Whole Foods aisle, they didn't feel so assailed by the fluorescent lighting that they just said, I can't do this anymore. They said, I'm going to hang in for one more day and see what happens tomorrow. Tomorrow might be the day I end it all.
Yeah.
But today, this music, I wonder what track it was. Did you ask that?
I think it was this one, Going
was
Home.
Was it? Yeah. That's another perfect segue. Now we're listening to Going Home, which is the second track, and we're just kind of seamlessly gone into the next. We've got four tracks that we're going to listen to throughout the course of the interview. How many tracks are actually on the album?
There's four tracks, and you might be able to get...
Oh, this is the album, right, because the last one is quite lengthy. Gotcha.
Yeah, so you might not be able to finish the last one, but yeah.
We'll get close. What is the runtime of this album? Looks like it's actually just a bit over an hour. Is that right?
Yeah, it's about 65 minutes, something like that. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, if I'd thought this through a bit more. We'll see whether or not there's going to be a show coming up. There's meant to be a show coming up at 7 o'clock called More Than Human. And I think Gareth might not be coming in today. Don't quote me on that, but he was emailing me earlier. If it's the case that he doesn't come in for his spot, we might as well ride this album out, because how perfect would that be? Folks, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, and this is Now We're Talking. Right now, as we do the interview with Jason Newcomb, we're listening to the new release, released September 22nd, called Dethrone the DJs. The band is called Ghazm. That's spelled G-H-A-Z-M, all uppercase, if you want to find some information about the band online.
And I was asking you, how do you categorize, which is always, of course, the most annoying question for any musician, but especially with what you do, because it's somewhat outside of the box. I was asking you how you categorize the music or describe the music. And you said there was a descriptor. You talked about being, I'm going to get this wrong, but cinematic. What did you say before?
So it's been the challenge to what to call this.
Yeah.
That is an honest reflection of what it is, because it has a lot of range.
Yeah.
And it's unusual. So the best descriptor that fits the most of what we do, I found, is cinematic drone rock.
Gotcha.
So we do use drones. We like using those. It seems natural for us. We get the comment a lot that it's cinematic, and that's how we view it. We view it as kind of like each piece has its own visuals that could be associated with it and has its own narrative.
Yeah.
So, and then it has rock aspects. I mean, I play guitar in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be like a descriptor. But I think genres, which I realize I know nothing about now.
Yeah.
I think in terms of genres, post-rock is probably the most honest thing, because people who like post-rock will probably like this.
Cool.
But it could also be just some sort of outlandish folk rock. It could be, there's like some electro techno elements to it. And I know what we're doing in rehearsal, and it's like we're further expanding the palette, so it could be a whole bunch of other things too. So it's a tough thing.
I guess when your approach to creating music out of the gates is to push boundaries and try to find an authentic experience of yourself in the music, and not to just be defined by being inside of a box, then when it comes to describing what genre it is, it's going to reveal the limitations of that. I know when I was in a band, by no means was it trying to step outside of the box, but it became laughable for us. Folk, pop, fusion, funk, just
probably
horrible.
All of those were true.
Yeah, it's like, well, this track is this and this track is this. And it basically just every time it just came across like, you guys are not professional at all. Like, it was frustrating because we spent so much time writing songs, recording. We spent a lot of time working on this, but apparently not enough time knowing quite what the thing was. But I guess, that's just the reality of trying to market something, is trying to put it into the place it needs. I'm sure, for example, when you put it on iTunes, you were accountable for deciding what genre it went into.
Yeah, and they completely changed it. Like, they've put us in the dance.
Dance?
Yep.
Just one word, dance. I mean, wouldn't it be beautiful? When you have more interviews, I think every interview you have, you should approach answering that, because it's going to come up in a different way. And I would like to be there when somebody says, so what kind of music is it? And you just say unabashedly, dance.
Yeah.
And they say, really, dance music? And they'll have their own idea what that means. Maybe they'll think about MC Hammer or something. You'll know what it is. Dance.
Yeah. I guess they're putting dance / electro. We might get to that one track that has like this beat to it. It's
that's
called Big Star.
Oh, yeah. Big Star. Yeah, we'll get
and that's
to that.
A direction we're exploring a little bit more, like to do more rhythmic oriented stuff. But yeah, we're a dance band.
Oh man, I've never had a member of a dance band in here before. Is this you playing the guitar, or is that the bass or the guitar?
This is me.
That line.
Yeah. So the three guys in the band, I play guitar, and then with like a bunch of effects and stuff. And Tony is doing that kind of low, kind of springy vocal.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting vocalist. He utilizes throat singing, overtone singing, very like cultural universal stuff. And then we have Paul Patko, who plays the twin Nintendo DS configuration. Yeah, so the Nintendo, he's got a software on it that runs like synths and beat makers and that sort of thing, and he plays that thing in the live ensemble.
I was just gonna say that would look pretty cool live.
Yeah,
so definitely look.
He's got two like mini computers on his like little desk there.
What a cool station on stage. Yeah. Is that guy in the band, or is he just a gamer? Yeah. What's going on here? No, trust me, he's in the band.
Yeah,
you'll hear it. Okay, but I feel like he's just playing Game Boy or something. What is it?
Yeah, so it's fun stuff. Yeah.
What was it like to be in the studio after playing guitar for so many years? You mentioned different moments in your experience of music, but you mentioned 7 years ago there was that insight that you had about it's kind of a corner that was turned. Suddenly this year, was it? I think it was this year you went into the studio, right? You were doing pre-production last year, but you recorded this year, didn't you?
Yes, in
earlier
May,
this year.
In May, yeah. Yeah.
And so what was it like after all that to finally, here I am, I'm in a studio, and I'm recording music. Was it stressful because you wanted to get it right, or was it pleasurable, or all of those things?
Yeah, all of those things, but it definitely felt like this is the thing that I'm meant to do. Like, I'm supposed to be doing this.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah, it felt, like, comfortable, and I felt at home, and I felt privileged because we were working with a producer, David Speidel, who's quite brilliant, and I knew how to nudge us in the right direction and knew how to get a good product quickly because we only spent 3 days in the studio.
Wow.
It's essentially a live album. I kind of forget to say that.
So live off the floor, the instruments are being played at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And
no overdubbing or just limited overdubbing?
We didn't do any overdubbing except for one spot in Big Star where we sang over each other. Due to limited time, but everything that you hear here.
Yeah, that is important information to be aware that this is actually happening in the room.
Yeah, if you go to one of our shows, you would get, this would be an accurate representation of what would happen.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I think we spoke maybe a couple weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, about there's a plan that you have or a hope that you have to do a show in an unconventional space. It was a church or something in the West End.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that still in the cards?
Yeah. So the album's out. We're doing a launch show.
Right.
November 23rd.
Okay, cool.
Barring, you know, a tornado or
act
something.
Act of God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
May he not act upon this show.
Maybe the ultimate act of God would be not to impose a tornado on the West End.
When we're doing a show in a church.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if anything, if the show does happen and it's not stopped, maybe that was an act of God.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'll take that.
It's a different act.
If God approves of the band, so you should buy the album.
If you were on the fence, now you know.
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do.
Or maybe you want to protest the album. Some people are just
come and
not
protest,
into God at
all. But just make sure you buy a ticket.
Yeah.
You know, protest inside. It's more effective that way. It'll make it for more of a happening. So that's coming up on November 23rd.
Yeah. So we booked a venue, and that's something that I'm hoping we'll play with more, like play in interesting locations.
Yeah.
Just because the music creates a sense of space. So to play in interesting spaces.
That does make sense. Yeah.
That lends itself well to how we want to approach that space.
Yeah, it's not really bar band music. You don't necessarily want to get put on a bill with eight other bands on Granville downtown. And
I'll do it.
But you have less control, I guess, over the experience
for
the person that's coming to the show. Yeah. So it is an interesting idea. Yeah. So will this basically be the big debut show as well?
This officially launches the show. Launches the album.
The album.
Sorry, yeah.
And the band in essence also, or there's been other gigs?
Oh, we've gigged before, and we had an EP released before this.
Okay.
About a year and a half ago, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we played a launch for that as well in a studio.
Okay, cool.
In the studio, we recorded it.
So that's cool.
That was fun, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'd be nice to do another show that accompanies this new product, this new music.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's, I'm excited for the show, actually. It's very, very, very close to exactly the way I dreamed of it. Yeah,
without it having happened yet.
Yeah,
you're saying that just in terms of the planning process and.
Well, I was hoping to get a specific church.
Oh, okay.
Just because of the acoustics, just ceilings three times as tall and a huge giant organ, but the price was a little out of our range. And that's another thing. At the show, we get to incorporate the pipe organ into the show.
So. Right, you mentioned that. That is cool. Just the natural reverb in the room, the way that the music decays in the room, as well as access to that instrument. That will be very cool.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. And what day of the week is that?
I think it's going to be a Thursday.
It's a Thursday.
Yeah.
And so if people are listening and they're interested, is there anything they can yet do to pursue this, or do we have to wait till closer to the date? How do people get tickets? Do they show up at the venue, or do they get them in advance?
That's actually a tough thing, because there's a couple of ways to, because it's an unusual venue and it's not right. necessarily designed for like a cinematic drone rock concert.
What?
I'm not sure. Like, there's two ways of setting up the stage, so we may sell a set number of tickets,
mm-hmm.
Or sell as many tickets as we can sell, and then decide how we arrange the place to make it happen.
Sure,
I'm not sure, but yeah, if people can just find us on Facebook and sure. follow us, and you know. All that stuff.
Gazm. If you're just yeah. tuning in, I'll say it again. The band is called Gazm, G-H-A-Z-M, or G-H-A-Z-M, if you want to just cut to the chase. You know, I used to be very stringent on pronouncing that letter as Z as yeah. a proud Canadian.
Yeah.
The older I get, I'm thinking, I don't have time to take this.
Were you
stuff
saying
like that.
Z with, like, your hand on your over
in
your heart?
In essence. I mean, if not literally, in my mind I was. And I've noticed the last couple of years, here I am saying Z, maybe out of respect to the fact that you're a Canadian band or something. But I'm totally cool with people just saying Z. You know what I mean? There's bigger things to worry about.
That's a good thing to be cool about.
Yeah, man. If you're going to be cool about something, be cool about that. Plus, I don't want to alienate American listeners of
yeah,
the show
sure.
either. I don't want them to get confused.
Z, you want to pronounce it F? I don't care.
I don't want to Canadianize your music, because I feel like your music is just music from human beings of the earth. So it's ZM, ZM, whatever you want. But that's the name of the band. It sounds like Facebook is your best bet.
Facebook,
if you
Twitter,
want to learn more.
Instagram,
Twitter,
the internet,
all that stuff. How do you feel about yeah. the use of social media?
I can give my phone number, then give me a call if you want.
Yeah. Hello. We've got to leave some suspense. We've got to build some mystery. We don't want to give it away too easy, I think. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Who knows? How do you feel about using the internet to draw attention to what you're doing, whether it's the disseminating of the music itself, or in this case, here I am saying, what should people do when they're interested in the band? Do you enjoy using it as a tool?
I think so. I mean, it's a tool, right? Like,
yeah.
It's I would much prefer like to talk to people who come to the show and stuff.
Yeah.
And but yeah, it's fine. I
guess if it creates that interaction.
You know what it does is it does force your hand to think about what you're going to put on there.
Yeah.
So it makes you more deliberate in like I've started recording the rehearsals.
Hmm.
For us, so that we can listen to them back, but we have video footage of the rehearsals. Put them on the internet. What's it gonna hurt, right? Like it kind of makes you think. I really like convergences. Like that's why part of the reason why I like the idea of a church. Like a lot of what is cool about playing a show converges at church,
right?
For some weird reason, and a lot of what is cool about communicating with people and being in a band converges at internet.
Yeah, in terms of community, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, in terms of like how you like stay in touch with people that may or may like you or may discover you,
right?
And in terms of like how you think about being in a band, kind of the internet kind of like funnels you into thinking about it a certain way, which is very useful for the creative process, I find.
Hmm.
Like as an example, like, well, I want to put content on there. I don't want to just be there.
Yeah.
So what are we going to put? And that now I have video footage of us rehearsing, which there's no waste. There's no wasted effort there. Right. It's like we had nothing. Now we have something. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm down with the internet. No, I'm totally hip to the internet.
I guess it's kind of like asking somebody, how do you feel about leaving the house? You know what I mean? It's like you might have misgivings about it, but at the end of the day, things can happen if you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And I guess at this point, I'm just thinking my own attitude towards it, because for me, when I was in a band, I leveraged those things to the max, and it was effective. And then by the time that the band was done, I think I was just exhausted of feeling like I needed to brand myself, you know. Maybe that was just the exhaustion with selling any product or being artistic or creative and sharing it with people. So I've kind of avoided it for the last few years. But I think if you have something you're proud of, then of course it's a good thing to be able to have the means to share it with others. The video thing is interesting too, because I feel like I feel like for so many people, and I've included myself in this, it's like if you're interested in something or somebody's like, hey, check this out, it's really helpful to look at something.
Yeah.
You know, especially when we're walking around with TVs in our pockets. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, even though it is music and it is audio, it's really important, I think, to find ways to share with people what you're doing through videos, whether it's you're rehearsing or it's a portion of a song that's being released, whatever it is, obviously a music video. Because that really is, I think, how people largely consume music.
Well, that's how we interact with human beings all the time. We just you look at them.
Yeah.
We're really into looking at people. Yeah. So
what's interesting about that is when you – so if you're going to share – for example, right now we're actually what's interesting about this is we're sharing this music and this is all audio.
Mm-hmm.
That this is kind of an exception to that. I mean, people do listen to podcasts, so I guess that would be an example of how
I think
it's
the
alive
difference
and well.
Between video and a podcast. Like video is kind of like you hanging out with people kind of.
Mm-hmm.
A podcast has more like a Russell Brand calls it. It was Jim Carrey. I heard him say it's kind of like a nightlight. It's like they're there, but they're, you know, it's like you don't have to feel alone, right?
Right.
You can kind of just put something there and be around people that are talking, right?
Right, right, right.
But like you
be
can
comforted
sort of,
by their presence
yeah.
without being inside of it as much.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
I thought that was an interesting analogy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And video, I think, requires your active attention.
That's right.
Because like if you turn away, you don't see that guy turn his head.
That's true enough.
Yeah.
I think actually that helps to explain why podcasting, which is obviously just another version of a radio show or something, is alive and well and maybe even growing.
Maybe people are listening to this while they're doing their dishes.
Exactly. I think that's what it is. Because I'm always curious. Actually, I ask people when they say they're huge into podcasts, when do you listen to it? It's usually when they're exercising or doing something mindless like the dishes or commuting or what have you. Situations where they don't want to be engaged visually. So mm-hmm. that's what it's for. Oh, phew. So music is alive and well. It doesn't necessarily require video. But it's good when it does. I guess I'm interested in this topic because, you know, I think there can be a lot of pressure when you've already created some music to create something videographically, which rises to the occasion.
Mm.
And, of course, that can just be another way to prevent you from sharing your thing because now that you've got the music, you're like, okay, but we need the greatest video ever, man.
Yeah, I've been thinking about video quite a bit and what it means.
Especially for your kind of music, because as you say, we've used the word cinematic in describing the music.
Yeah.
That implies that it's lends itself to the visual.
Well, yes. And then the flip side of that is the people listening to the music report kind of having visuals
creating
happen.
Their own film.
So it's kind of, do we want to impose a certain...
Yeah. Choice.
Yeah. Which ultimately if we can pull it off we will, right?
Sure.
But it's something that's interesting to think about. Like
it makes me think about reading a book. You know, people talk about how man, the book was way better than the
movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because they're creating their own film.
It's like they were my
idea. He's not supposed to have a beard. get rid of that beard.
Yeah.
He's clean shaven and he looks like Rob Lowe.
My Harry Potter doesn't look like Daniel Radcliffe at all.
Not at all. Not even close.
Was it Daniel Radcliffe?
It was, okay. I believe. Okay. That sounds very likely. Okay. I never got into those films, but I'm pretty confident that that's accurate information.
Yeah.
Folks, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We do the best we can to provide you with accurate information, both host and guest alike.
Mm.
And of course, you have the freedom as you're listening to this to prove us wrong by going on the internet. But don't be a jerk. Just believe that we're telling you the truth and that we're doing the best that we can. Right now, by the way, we're listening to the third track. Is this in sequence? Baked on the Beach, Going Home, Big Star. Is this the right sequence of that?
I guess Big Star would come second.
Second track. So we're listening to it in our own order here tonight. This is the second track off the album called Big Star. And that's this. When I'm hearing some vocals in this off the top, and I'm still hearing some... This has more vocals than the other tracks?
Yeah, this is... this. Well, the intent that provided momentum to the composition of this track was less ethereal and more directed. So it was kind of a place that I was hoping to nudge the band towards because I knew the band could do this. So I just kind of tried to push in that direction, and of course the guys rose to the occasion and did better than you could ever imagine. And so this is a bit of a departure for us, but I know what we're doing in rehearsal, and we're not being incoherent. Like, there's more of not this kind of thing, but this kind of approach happening. Yeah.
What does it feel like to have found collaborators that you're satisfied with?
Oh my God.
Is it?
I keep talking
about being comforted and a relief. I don't know what I'm projecting on this conversation, yeah, but I imagine it's a relief when you know that you want to do something and you know you want to find the right people. And the way I've heard you talk about this experience in this interview and otherwise is it sounds like you're satisfied that you found some good collaborators.
I know that I'm incredibly fortunate to have my first band be a really good band. Most people go through a process of, like, they go through bands, they cycle through them, they get frustrated, and finally they hopefully land on collaborators that they like. But, like, the first band that I managed to get in, it was a long wait, but the first one is this, and I get to do the kind of thing that I really, really like, and they like it too. It's really amazing.
Do you think it's lucky or a fluke, or is it something to do with you having that first band later in life?
Well, geez, I don't know, Jeff. You're making me think about things.
All right, finally, I've asked a question where I've forced you to think.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I would imagine it's going to be both, but it's interesting to me because oftentimes when people have their first band, in my case, I didn't do the first band thing when I was a teenager, but sometimes, you know, got your garage band when you're first playing and go through different stages. But like anything in life, I was having a conversation with a friend who's going back to university in his late 30s or whatever, and we were talking about how that's different to be going to school in your late 30s versus when you're a teenager. And I just wonder if that's the case when you talk about finding the right group of people. Is that because you've been patient or whatever it is that's caused you to at this stage in life pursue it? Maybe it's more, was it more thoughtful, or maybe you just did just stumble across these guys? I mean, how did it happen, I guess, is the
question. It feels like it happened by accident. But the way, if there is any inciting incident, is me creating like a venue in my garage. Back then I was renting a house and I was going to open mics and couldn't really connect with people. People didn't seem to hate the music or anything like that, but it just wasn't happening.
Yeah.
And I was getting frustrated. So I thought, well, I'm going to create something that other musicians want, and then I'll just slip myself in the lineup there and they'll listen to my music, right? Mm-hmm. And then I got lucky in that a lot of good musicians came. And I don't know how it happened, but eventually, like, they realized I'm not, like, a crazy person and were willing to collaborate with me. And it started when the guy I started this band with, John, who's not in the band right now, amicably, and he agreed to play on an album that I did of my solo stuff that I never released, because I didn't feel I was doing a good job. John was doing great. And then while we did that, John and I were realizing we had a similar interest in music, like overlapping interests. And I was like, why wouldn't we could do this, like we could do that, like wouldn't that be cool? And then we just like got a rehearsal space and started to make sounds, and eventually, like, through the network, people kind of became attracted or were seduced to the project. It's an accident that I prepared for, I guess.
Yeah, an accident that you initiated.
Yeah,
that you set into motion. I mean, that's what I'm hearing. Is it's like, you were frustrated when you were going to these open mics waiting for something to happen until you realized, I've got to make something happen, and people can take it or leave it.
Yeah,
it's interesting how simple that is as a concept, but I just think about my own life and think about how there need to be those moments, those choices, that restlessness where a decision is made so that the chips can fall where they may.
Yeah, it's like...
And oftentimes the people are actually eager to get involved in that because they're having that same angst maybe, and they're seeing that a thing is happening. Okay, well, I'll do that. Let's do that then.
It's almost as if we're all people.
Yeah, we're all people that can get along and make something happen.
Yeah.
But where does initiative come from? I mean, I think it comes from the desire to put something into motion. I think more than anything comes from restlessness. You know, because it sounds like you needed to do it. It sounds like you wanted to do it probably for a long time, but at some point you needed to do it.
Yeah.
And then here you are in a relatively short amount of time compared to the amount of time that you've been alive or that you picked since you picked up the guitar. It's amazing how quickly things can come together where we are talking about the album that we're listening to.
It does seem to work that way. It's better to make something happen than have nothing happen. So you can do it wrong.
Yeah.
Something will happen. And once you have something, well, then you have something you can fix.
Yeah, exactly. Sit here and discuss, and you know, things can start to play out so that it's not just spinning around in your mind forever. Forever. I mean, I know all about that, my friend. I know all about that. Folks, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. Jason Newcomb is here in the studio, also known as Ulysses, by the way. Don't be fooled. He's a man of many identities, depending on who he met and where. We were talking about that before. But in the context of the band, are you known as Jason or Ulysses?
Ulysses, yeah.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. You're Jason to me, but that's for me in our own personal life. So this is Ulysses Newcomb. From Gasm here in the studio.
I'm happy to be Jason to you.
You don't mind it?
Yeah.
Cool. But on the air from now on, I'm going to make a commitment to embrace this because I got an email from you at one point, and all I saw was this Ulysses thing. I very nearly deleted it. I didn't.
So you're making the transition to Ulysses
as we speak.
Can you handle this? Like
I don't know. I don't know actually. I think Ulysses. It's it's an extra syllable. It's a name that I haven't otherwise said very often in life. Yeah.
I don't know if I can handle it. Like,
I guess you don't have to too much as long as it's people, know.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to say your own name too much. I'll say it for you.
Together, we can do this.
Together, we can do it. I mean, if you can make this album, if you're willing to make this album, I should be willing to say Ulysses. What was the inspiration for the name, by the way?
It's a very vague and boring story.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's college radio, so it's perfect. We don't have a lot of time, so maybe we will save that for another time. I don't know if we have time to flesh this out, but I'm curious to kind of go into your backstory and talk about the journey that you've gone through in your life that's led you to placing value on doing this. I mean, I know that that's... I don't know how much you want to get into that at the moment or at all. It's an interesting story, though. Is there anything you want to talk about from your own... personal history?
I think I know what you're driving at because we've talked about it before.
Yeah, it's a large topic, and
I don't care.
I am leaving it, 10 minutes left in the show, so it's kind of a robust conversation that maybe is warranted for another time. But I remember when we've talked about your personal history, I guess the main takeaway for me is how much freedom means to you.
Mm.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, cognitive liberty is a very
cognitive liberty. I like it.
Freedom. It's hard to know what that means.
Sure,
but because I am intimate with my own thoughts, I can, I stand a chance to know if they're mine and not someone else's.
There was a time when that was not necessarily the case.
Yeah. So I think what you're driving at is that I grew up in a fundamentalist Christian household.
Yeah.
And that the breaking out of that was a process. And I think a lot of what... the way that I developed a relationship with music has something to do with that, in that that's where I discovered optionality and how incredibly valuable that is. And
that is an interesting parallel. We spoke about that earlier in this interview. There's different moments in your musical career, let's say, where you've thought, oh, actually, I could do it this way.
Yeah, exactly.
Optionality. Interesting. And so that experience of realizing that there's optionality in your life itself.
And also contending with it. It's like, what happens? What do you do about that? Faced with this infinite vista of options.
Right.
Then what? Like what?
Yeah. It's exciting or is it overwhelming?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which is it?
There's also a terror associated with it, right?
Yeah.
So... yeah, learning how to deal with that was a process. It's for me it was a lengthy process. I don't know if it's my inherent cautiousness or what it is, but Yeah, it took a while, and a lot of it happened intuitively, not so much on surface thoughts. It took a long time for me to be able to articulate what I knew to be more true. And so I guess I have a respect for my gut instinct now and my intuition.
It's interesting to hear you talk about cognitive liberty, and in the case of your own story, it's a very literal experience of feeling confined, at least in terms of your ideas. But it's interesting. It's like it could be a metaphor, that experience of growing up in a community that has rigid ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whatever community that we exist within, whether it's explicit or not, just whatever society or the culture that you're in, we are all a product of our environments, and we might be more bound by ideas than we know. I mean, we talk about this music and how it's about stepping outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got me thinking about, gee, I wonder what my experience has been in life of being confined and it not necessarily knowing it, not necessarily having a moment where I was in this thing and I broke through and there you go.
Mm.
It might be more harder to discern. No idea right now if I'm babbling or if it makes any sense, but I'm just thinking about how it's kind of almost like a metaphor to exist within. I don't know if I can use the word cult or not in your case, but I'm just thinking about some sort of group where you felt the need to break free of. And other things that people need to break free of in order to express themselves, you know?
It's never a waste to pursue the outer edges of what you're capable of thinking.
Yeah.
And you were talking about, like, the power of ideas. Whether this is true or not, it's an interesting way to think about it. It was Carl Jung who said that people don't have ideas, ideas have people.
Hmm.
You know, do you know which ideas have you?
Hmm.
Kind of thing,
at
right?
This moment, yeah.
And are you choosing which ideas have you?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. The answer is no, I don't. In a word, I don't think that I do.
Hmm.
When you're talking about the edges, too, actually, it makes me think about another quote, which I certainly don't remember. But in fact, I've seen it in our building, the building in which we reside, which basically talks about... My paraphrase, horrible paraphrasing of it, is just, you know, we must explore those boundaries. It's the best way to expand consciousness and ideas, basically. In fact, indeed, there is no other way to do
that. It says that whole thing on our building?
It sure does. It has to wrap around twice. The size of the lettering is unreasonable.
I think I've been doing the tour wrong.
I think whoever started writing that didn't realize how many words there were, because otherwise I would have chosen a much smaller font just to keep it on one wall.
And then give everybody a magnifying glass.
Exactly. Yeah. As soon as you walk in, just be like, "Here, what's this for?" You'll see. It's for the quote over there. It's never a good idea to reference a quote, certainly not in the context of like a presentation like this podcast, when you don't even know half of the words from the quote. I mean, it's okay if you have no desire or expectation of being poignant or fascinating,
right.
Which I don't, thankfully. But anyway, it makes me think about that, just the idea that I think it is actually very audacious and bold and even presumptuous to imagine exploring the outer edges of anything with the goal of expanding them, because it sounds vaguely egotistical and insane. But the trouble with not doing that for fear of being or being perceived as egotistical is, if nobody is willing to do that, then nothing can change,
mm-hmm.
you know? So actually, in a way, it's a responsibility that we all have to try to do that.
In the interest of evening things out, I'm gonna say something I don't entirely remember also.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's about like outlier ants or like fringe ants, rogue ants or something like that.
Okay.
It's where scientists have discovered, like, in an ant colony, I was gonna say hive, which was I was almost really dumb.
So close.
Yeah.
So close to redeeming me by comparison.
Yeah, I've just so the ant colony has, like, once they find a source of food, they communicate with each other. God, I hope people don't source this out, see how totally wrong I am, but they'll communicate with each other where the source of food is. And then everybody in a line follows the ant in front of them to where the food is.
Right.
So that they don't die.
Yep.
And then you have ants that just like, no, screw it, I'm going over there. And they're the ants that find new sources of food.
Interesting.
Because if there's no rogue ants, the food source gets exhausted and everybody dies.
So rather than the rogue ant being the thing that gets weeded out through a process of evolution because it's trivial, it's actually what's keeping the thing going.
Exactly.
That is precisely interesting. Seems counterintuitive.
So you're saying, like, is it egotistical to go find the outer edges or whatever, or the value of trying to find the outside perimeter of what you are? Yes, absolutely. Like, that's what saves you, I think.
That's the way to find more food. Yeah. It's another food source.
I think Rogue Ant is going to be our next name of our next album.
I think Gasm is a good name. I think you just changed. If you're serious about this, you got to change the band name. Or you've already changed your own name. Change your name to Rogue Ant. I don't know if it's hyphenated
only
or not.
If you do a Rogue Uncle.
Rogue Ant and Rogue Uncle.
And
we'll discuss the details after the show, and if we can achieve consensus, then when we do the follow-up interview, that's how we'll debut it, because I've already referred to you by multiple names in this interview.
Okay, we'll keep it going. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you explained that to me, because that's basically talking about those rogue ants, and that's food for thought for us to wrap up the show right now.
All right.
It flies right by, and by the way, listening to the final track on the album, which is going to play us out right now. It's called The Last One. You've been listening to Ulysses Newcomb. He's come in here and to talk with me on Now We're Talking. The important things to remember is the show's coming up on November 23rd.
Yep.
And there's more information about that, and there will be more information if you find Gasm, Ghazm, on Facebook. We have run out of time, but thanks for coming in.
This was so much fun.
It really flies by, right? It was a good conversation. It's my first time doing this in 3 months, and I'm glad that you came in. You're my guest for this.
Your talent saw you through.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, man. Thanks for coming in.